The following contest is scheduled for one fall. Please welcome Mr. Freds.
What is going on, peeps, and welcome to episode, I think it's 157 of the Fretzelmania podcast. I've lost count, and I am your host, the North American treasure, your second favorite Canadian, Mr. Fretz. Today we, I'm saying we because I did not come alone, are reviewing Backlash 2000, and for the first time ever, and for the second will ever, sorry, Tower Shook, I have Mr. Will Gray from Botched Spots and Chair Shots, a show I was a guest on sometime last year. Will, how the heck are you?
I'm good. Just enjoying my evening. I always enjoy doing some of these retro callback shows because it's fun to go back and, like we were just saying, literally right before we hit record, where some of these 2000s, 2003, 4, 5, 6, you start getting the range where I was in high school and early into college, and I remember watching live, going to watch parties, you know what I mean? So this is that prime watching wrestling for me, you know what I mean? Because I was 2000, I was 15 years old. So like that's the, you know, the key demo for the Attitude Era in a lot of ways, that young, angsty teenager. So it was a lot of fun to go back and rewatch this one.
It absolutely was. And this is one heck of a show. And as you may know, Will, before I get into my pay-per-view reviews, I like to take a bite of the pop culture that was going on in April 2000. Would you like to hear it?
Absolutely.
In theaters, we had Flintstones' Viva Rock Vegas. And more importantly, Ready to Rumble, bitches, David Arquette.
Ooh, that was the summer of 2000, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. We are weeks away from David Arquette as the WCW champion. Mance, who was a podcaster on Wrestle Addict some time ago, he went through this era in WCW, and I keep asking, ow. This movie was just pure 2000s cheese. Nate and I reviewed it some time ago too, but it gave us the gem that was David Arquette as the champion. In music, we had Papa Roach's Infest that, of course, had Last Resort, had Broken Home. It had two other banger hits. Although I am more partial to Wanna Be Loved, former theme for Monday Night Raw. No Doubt's Return of Saturn. And Cypress Hill's Skull and Bones, yes, that is the one with Thug Superstar, which would go on to be Taz's entrance theme near the end of his in-ring career. And in video games, I only have one down here, but it's a pretty damn good one. And it is Excitebike 64.
I don't think you can ever go wrong with an Excitebike of any kind, because that was one of those very niche video games where you either loved them or you didn't have anything to do with them. And they kept making them, man. And I don't think I ever played one that I disliked. And then you look at the games like Trials HD and stuff that have came out since that are all just kind of like, you know, copies of what Excitebike was back in the day. So I like that. Excitebike 64 in 2000. Huh.
Was right up my alley, and everything back then was, if it wasn't something 64, it was something 2000.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. WrestleMania 2000 was a banger of a video game that came out around that time. That was when THQ took over, and a lot of people had a lot of beef with that series when they started redoing the, and they went with more of an arcade based thing than an actual outright fighter. And you know, unpopular opinion, I didn't mind the 2K games, or the THQ games, I didn't mind those. WrestleMania 2000, not a bad game in my book. Not the best, but it wasn't bad.
The GOAT's No Mercy. It's right over there on my desk. I played it so much the cartridge does not even work anymore. Just my whole console's broken. But Will, cheers to you. Thank you for coming on. And we are going to get right into the rigors of April 30th, 2000. I was 1 week after turning 16. I just turned 40 years old, and I don't feel it. I feel the same. We had the MCI Center in Washington, D.C., the home of the Washington Capitals. But as you see, I'm decked out in Maple Leaf gear because puck drop is in just over an hour. Go Leafs, go. 19,000 fans, 650,000 buy rate, which I was one of. I'm in 10th grade in high school. This is what I call the Dave's basement era. I had my buddy Dave and one of my best buddies, actually through elementary and high school. We always went to his house for some WrestleManias, SummerSlams, Kings of the Rings, random pay-per-views. We, unfortunately, well, Over the Edge 99 was one of the things that we watched live, and RIP Owen, that was fucking awful. And ironically, our last one was X7, how everyone treats that as like the apex and the end of the Attitude Era, which I vehemently disagree with. It's when the WWF got the F out. But we're going to get right into our opening match, and we see Deborah is here for reasons. Well, her husband's here today, so that's why. And the King is popping his pants. We got Edge and Christian versus D-Generation X, represented by, well, the only remnants of DX we have left, the Road Dogg and X-Pac with their banger Run DMC King of Rock theme, the only good song from WWF Aggression. I will die on that hill. Will, we got to talk about that set from Backlash, the legendary, the swinging hooks. Is that the GOAT or is that not the GOAT?
I muted because the dogs were barking. I think for that time period, absolutely it was. I am in favor now of them moving towards a smaller production for live shows, putting more butts in seats. Back then, this was the. I always think of this one and I think of Royal Rumble 2000 with the crashed cars like up in the
Yes.
entryway and stuff like that. I think those were the. This was the apex of the custom pay-per-view entranceway. Backlash is always at the top of that list for sure.
It's phenomenal, and we'll see later that the swinging hooks actually they play a role, excuse me, in this. And Deborah here has some legendarily bad ring announcing. If you're a listener of the Attitude Era podcast from back in the day, they roast the crap out of this one. It's like Edge and Christian, the Generation X represented. And we have X-Pac here going for the tag titles. And pop quiz for you, Will, for you. Who are the three people that X-Pac won the tag titles with in WWE?
He won the tag titles with Kane. He won the tag titles with. Didn't he win them with Gold Dust?
No.
No?
We're
Okay.
going
Kane was the only
these
one
are
I
in
could.
94 and 95. They were very short reigns. Very, very short.
Oh, I wouldn't have the slightest in 94 and 95. Who was he tagging with then?
Well, 94, he had like a 1 week reign beating the Quebecers for the titles with Marty Jannetty. And
Holy crap,
then
okay.
1995, Royal Rumble, this was the same part that set up Bam Bam versus Lawrence Taylor. We had the finals for the tag team titles tournament where Bob Holly tagged with the 1-2-3 Kid to beat Bam Bam and Tatanka in the Million Dollar Corporation. X-Pac going
Wow.
for going for another tag title run here, and we get right into this match, and it's a pretty standard tag team match. We have Edge and Christian who are starting to lean a little bit more heel, especially the we will see here in the finish. Kristen goes for the a reverse hot shot, like a Rude Awakening kind of hot shot, stun gun on the ropes, and the Bronco Buster by X-Pac, which is a heel move. Aggressively putting your groin in someone's face is Just so babyface. We got the dance punches. We got a mid-air collision on Edge, and we called, somehow he called that Air Canada. No, he's later in the show. Edge with a power bomb. We got legal man syndrome in this. And this sequence here I thought was very impressive, where Dog goes for the pump handle on Christian. Christian reverses it to the kill switch. That gets reversed into an X-Pac kick. And then Edge spears Road Dogg at the end of that exchange. It was just nonstop. Went go, go, go. We have Tori on the apron. X-Pac accidentally decks her. We have Edge with the roll-up on a two count. The X-Factor. Christian gets the bell, and they hit that on X-Pac, and that is the tactic that wins this opening match. Edge and Christian retain. Spoiler alert for next month, they're tagging with Kurt Angle, so they are starting to lean into this heel for the benefit of those with Flash Photography persona. How did you like this opening match, Will?
I think that this is the you were talking earlier that said TLC 2 at X7 and all of that was kind of the apex and towards the end of the Attitude Era. For me, I think that this pay-per-view specifically, because we see Edge and Christian, we see the Hardy Boys, and we see the Dudleys, all three in action. Okay. So you think about the fact that where we're at in Backlash, and then at SummerSlam 2000, we get the first TLC match. You see what I mean? So we're only a couple of months away from these three teams completely changing tag team wrestling. They were all three in very different points on this card. I didn't like this version of D-Generation X. I felt like Road Dogg always fell flat without Billy Gunn, because he's always been the mouth in that tag team, whereas Billy Gunn was always the better worker. And it's kind of the same thing here when you see him with X-Pac. You kind of got that same vibe, like, and X-Pac's just not the worker Billy Gunn is. So it's like a watered down version of the New Age Outlaws to me, is what it seemed like. And Edge and Christian is my third favorite tag team out of those three, anyways. So I know it's a tough one, especially I just broke your little Canadian heart. I could feel it from Tennessee. But they're my third favorite pick out of the Attitude Era tag team run, with the Dudley Boys being number one. I just felt like they were the quintessential Attitude Era tag team, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
So
Canadian bias, and because I'm from the Toronto area, I gotta stick it with my boys. But who's number three? Sorry, Matt and Jeff. Sorry. I mean, Matt Hardy just turned up in TNA, Twist of Fading Moves, Delete Persona. I think that might be pretty cool. But backstage, we have the final boss arriving. It's The Rock pulling up in a limo. And oh man, I don't know about you, but cruiserweight action, right up my alley. We have the light heavyweight championship. This is a title whose lineage goes as far back as the 1980s. If you actually look at the history of this title, a veritable who's who in pro wrestling would have held this title. I think off the top of my head, I'm certain like Jushin Liger, Ultimo Dragon, maybe Pegasus Kid, maybe Perry Arguello. Because I think it was in Mexico and Japan, if I'm not mistaken, before
it was in
Takamichi
Japan for a long time, because I cut you off, you were saying his name. Takamichi Noku took it over there to Michinoku Pro Wrestling and was wrestling with the WWF light heavyweight title. WWF allowed him to kind of move that title around in the booking for Michinoku Pro Wrestling. Then you tie into the J Cup, which was in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and Antonio Inoki brought in nine different light heavyweight champions from around the world and held this big massive, or it was eight rather, massive tournaments. They did a winner takes all thing. Ultimo Dragon won it and went to WCW, and he had a winner takes all match with Dean Malenko for that light heavyweight title. And this is where you get into that gray area where Ultimo Dragon would wear the WWF light heavyweight title for house shows, but WWF wouldn't let him wear it for the TV tapings. So that's why when you see him sometimes in pictures, he has all the belts, but when you see him on TV, he doesn't have the WWF light heavyweight title, but he was the reigning WWF light heavyweight champion on WCW TV. One of my favorite like WTF moments in wrestling is wrapped around this light heavyweight title.
I was gonna say his name too, because I thought Dragon was the 10 belts he came out with on
Yeah.
TV. Friggin' Sonny Ono beat up Paul Heyman, you know, the why aren't you carrying like five of these things? I have Big Goldie on my shelf over here. That thing's like 5 pounds. Imagine wearing that thing at a wrestling show all the time. Like if I ever go to WrestleMania, not a fucking chance. I'm wearing my friggin' kids belt that's on my wall, but we got Scotty Too Hotty, who just lost the title to the champion here, Dean Malenko, and they have been having some banger matches on TV, some of which that I have recently been reviewing on the weekly Raw reviews. I just did one where Scotty won the title. So on the SmackDown, like 3 days before this, they hot potatoed the belt back to him. And ironically, this was around the same time, we'll cover it later here, where Taz was the reigning ECW champion on WWE TV. He drops that to Tommy Dreamer, who then top drops that to Justin Credible, because apparently Tommy didn't want to be the ECW champion. But man, these two, in the absence and in the injury of Scotty Too Hot, of sorry, Grandmaster Sexay, mind you, have been just tearing it up on TV. Lillian gets down with Scotty, well, does a little dance with him as they go, and Scott, they're saying Scotty wants to lose this. Wrestle without losing his hat. Oh, never mind. Pile driver into an arm drag. Off comes the hat. We get a suplex and a kip up by Scotty. A worm bulldog reversed into a lariato. And there's like a, I wrote down Boris Malenko something. They were talking about Boris Malenko during this match. I think it was a move that bore us Malenko. Sorry, Chris Jericho, mentioned here. A Russian chain match. That's what it was. We have Dean dropkick to the knee. He's working the knee throughout this entire match. So then he can't dance. He can't do the worm. Scotty will have to rely on his DDT, I guess. The enziguri is noped. We have Dean working the knee more with a knee bar, which is probably hold number, let's say 712 out of 1,004 holds. WORM, King with a pretty fly for a white guy line, which, I mean, that was one of the biggest songs in the world at that time. Malenko goes for a top rope something. And then we get a tiger bomb by Dean Malenko going for the superplex. And then, oh, Scotty, I'm sorry here. Scotty's going for a superplex, I think. And then in midair, we get Dean reversing to a super DDT. Strong style match here, retains the light heavyweight championship. My God, this was better than they deserve all the credit for. Will?
I put Dean Malenko, and this is going to sound crazy when I say this out loud, okay? I put him on my greatest list of cruiserweight champions, and he might be the most technical cruiserweight champion to ever hold the title. He's not the greatest cruiserweight champion. He's on the Mount Rushmore with your Eddies and your Rays and your Dean Malenkos, and you know, that's a different episode, different conversation. But I think one thing to remember about Dean Malenko is he wrestled like a heavyweight, but he only weighed 200 pounds. You know what I mean? He was a small dude. He wrestled like a heavyweight, though. He had 1,004 holds. He could do all of the locks and the holds and the tosses and the bumps. He could do all of it. And then when you would see him work, specifically even somebody like Scotty Too Hotty, who isn't necessarily a high flyer, who's just to get in there and wrestle you kind of wrestler with a little bit of a comic gimmick. He was able to do things even then that pulled the best out of Scotty Too Hotty. Because just call a spade a spade. Scotty Too Hotty wasn't known for his singles wrestling in 2000. He's coming out of Too Cool with Rikishi and all of that stuff. Like none of those guys, Rikishi aside, Scotty and Brian Christopher, neither one of those really took off as singles competitors. They both kind of floundered in the mid-card range. And I think that Dean Malenko took Scotty Too Hotty and pulled him out of that. And they were like, oh shit, like Scotty could work. And then he goes back to doing all the normal Scotty Too Hotty things. And you're like, oh no, he just worked a really great match because it was Dean Malenko.
Absolutely. Like Dean can bring out the best in everyone here, including his WCW Cruiserweight title run. Just chef's kiss.
I say
Actually,
him, and I say Ray was the best wrestler to hold that title, like complete overall unit. I say Dean was the most technical, and Eddie was the best talker. Ray was the combination of those two things together. And that core, like 96, 97, 98 WCW run. Yeah, it's nuts, dude. There's such a talented roster.
it's an overabundance of riches there, because you even have the people that you'll only see on Saturday night, like who are we to doubt El Dandy? We got Ciclope. There was one dude who had a very, very brief run named Blitzkrieg, and I've been rediscovering him through Wrestling Bios Monday Night Wars on YouTube. And this dude was flash in the pan, but my God. Backstage, we got Vince McMahon redacted talking strategy with Shane, special guest referee, main events. The Stooges are here. They're planning. And we get right into our next match here. This is just meat slapping majesty. Boss Man and Bull Buchanan versus the Acolyte Protection Agency, who just recently debuted like that the whole protection gimmick, complete with the door and the poker table backstage. And hey, go through the door because it's. I love their universe. It's an invisible door, and if you kind of break the fourth, their fourth wall, they'll talk shit to you, or they'll be like, "No, wait, who's there? No one's there, man. Nope. Just you're sitting here smoking, drinking. Oh, hi! It's like you. I love it. We have Brooks Jensen's dad here tagging up with the big boss man, and man, Bull Buchanan. This was a underrated worker. This is the guy that always kind of flew under the radar, just struggled in the lower card. And even when he was a tag champion later this year under Right to Censor. But man, this guy was fantastic. But we had a decent bumping meet back and forth, but face basically plotting match, which was showcasing Bull Buchanan's agility, excuse me, with his springboard clothesline, his top rope moves, moving really big for a big man. But then we get a nightstick and a Bull Don't Miss top rope scissors kick, nothing but net by Bull Buchanan. And Boss and Bull win this fairly standard match. But what did you think of Brooks Jensen's dad, Will?
I had that in my brain, like ready and loaded in the chamber in case you didn't say it, because I only just recently found that out. I've only been privy to NXT for probably the last 6 months. I quit watching after the Black and Gold era died and they went to 2.0. I didn't really watch NXT for well over a year during the 2.0 era. So when Pretty Deadly and some of these guys debuted, I was like, who the fuck is that? So a lot of these guys I'm only just learning and just like readapting to. Like I just found out what a Sol Ruco was.
Oh my God. Dude, did you see her last night? Springboard wicked art. It's all over Twitter, but it's like a springboard RKO.
What is it? The Soul Snatcher is what it's called. It's where she does
Yes.
the front flip RKO stunner out of the corner, dude. It's a wicked fucking finish. I love everything about it. But because I don't want, I'll just say it, I was ignorant to NXT. I watch a whole lot of indie wrestling. So I didn't want to watch WWE's indie wrestling. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's how I viewed it. Now I watch NXT and I'm like, shit, this is better booked some weeks than Raw or SmackDown is story-wise. Like, Shawn Michaels puts a lot of meat on those bones in 2 hours. Bull Buchanan is in a really unfortunate situation in this match because he's in a match tagging with the Big Boss Man, who's a legend and an all-time great, and they're going against the APA, which is one of those like great tag. Like I just rattled off, the Hardys and the Dudleys and Edge and Christian, and then you forget that you also had the APA and the Brothers of Destruction and the Rock and Sock Connection and like everybody else. So, the two-man power trip, like all of these rock star tag teams that came through during the Attitude Era, and you're like, holy shit! Like Bull Buchanan is a fantastic worker lost in a sea of fantastic workers, and that was the unfortunate timing of this like 2000 to 2001, 2002 era WWE, because as the bubble burst in WCW and all those guys came over, it was like this oversaturation of talent and a bunch of guys trying to get their shit in. I'm not the biggest Bradshaw fan, though. The Paul Heyman line always sticks with me. Like, the only reason you held the title that long is because Triple H didn't want to work Tuesdays. I never, outside of the APA, I never bit on the whole cowboy gimmick. I didn't like him as Blackjack Bradshaw when he was, riding Blackjack Mulligan's coattails. Like, it just never got over with me. Don't yuck any yums, to each their own, but Bradshaw was my least favorite of the four people in this match.
I love this Bradshaw. I wanted to
The
see.
APA Bradshaw was a rock star, dude. Absolutely, yeah. I just didn't care for the cowboy gimmick. It's just to me, I'm not a Hangman Adam Page fan. You know what I
Same.
mean? Like, if I want to watch a fucking Western, I'll watch 310 to Yuma. Like,
Ooh, okay. Now, bro, I'm a redneck, right? So I'm usually cowboy shit is up my alley, but yeah, this version of Bradshaw, yes. This quick cyborg, I would have preferred if we got like Stan Hansen version of Bradshaw instead of, stock JBL rich New York shit heel. I mean, I always say this, JBL is one of the worst gimmick transformations I've ever seen. Just that's just me. I get a lot of shit for it, but that's, yucking the yums there.
It just wasn't my thing, man. I'm with you.
Yeah. And speaking of yums here, we have the hardcore title. Backstage, the Hardys and the Hollies are talking about the hardcore challenge match, and Bob Holly hates sportsmanship, apparently. So we have the Houdini of hardcore, my favorite era of this title. Oh, fucking love it. Crash Holly, Bob Holly, the Hardy Boys, Taz, the former ECW champion, and Perry Saturn, former ECW tag team champion. Friend of the show, Kyle. Actually, I saw this thing. I think it had Perry Saturn on it, where in ECW, he tried to set up a ladder on top of a table in the corner, thinking like, how is this
And
gonna
then he
go
did the
bad?
elbow drop out of it. I just
Right in
saw
New
that
Jack's face.
TikTok.
Right in
Yeah.
New Jack's face. Like
I just
broken.
saw that video this morning.
That had to be a broken orbital bone. Kyle's gonna be in a future pay-per-view review coming up here in another couple of months, but man, this is my favorite era of the title. So Taz, he was recently the ECW champion because this was the bit where Mike Awesome, who was the reigning champion, debuted on Nitro attacking Kevin Nash. So Paul Heyman sees this is like, oh shit, we got to get the title off of this guy. So there is this random house show, an ECW house show, where you had an anomaly. Nothing like this had ever taken place since, I don't think. You had a WWE contracted worker versus technically a WCW contracted worker, although I'm not sure Mike had his contract yet. And you were at an ECW show for the ECW title. This is friggin' universe. This is like universe mode gone wild. Taz beats him for the belt, and then we have to hot potato the belt to Tommy Dreamer. And legend has it, Tommy, he was shown crying after he won this belt, but it was more crying out of frustrations. Like, I didn't want to be the champion. He didn't want to be the WWE ECW champion.
He wanted to
Like,
be
I.
the ECW champion. He wanted that when it mattered for ECW, not after WWE bought it out and blah, blah, blah. He didn't want to be Vince McMahon's ECW champion. And to hear him tell that story, like, rips your heart out, because it's like getting the replica version of what you want almost. Sorry, I didn't mean to hijack what you were saying.
No, that's okay. That was pretty much it. But then we had Justin Credible, who was kind of floundering in the mid-card in ECW. Lance Storm goes off to form my favorite stable in WCW history, Team Canada, him being the only Canadian on the team, other than PCO and the Mountie, who joined very, very briefly. You can tell I am very passionate about. So
I love some
we had.
PCO.
Oh man, he's still going to it, like almost 60 years old. My God, that guy's. He had like a Monsters Ball match with Connor from the Ascension, and it was a banger.
Yep.
Man, but we have. This is a Sox Tiger Brawl, as they call it here. Let's go, Blue Jays. But we have. a line here where it's more, where this match is more dangerous than Halle Berry's driving. Well, I think she had some DUIs at that time, so we're going on there. Perry Pearl Harbor's Crash on the way to the ring. Bob gets a jackknife powerbomb on Crash. And speaking of Bob, he needs some new entrance music, so we can lack him now. We have a schmoz full of weapons. We have everyone, people are starting to climb. I think it's Crash and Matt Hardy are starting to climb the swinging blade set. One of them kind of falls apart. Then Crash is hanging upside down, and I'm looking at that, and that's definitely a torn ACL. Just sitting there hanging. Matt dives off of it, and this might be, I might be way off, but one of the very first audible holy shit chants I've heard in the WWE. Maybe Cactus Jack versus Triple H, maybe Rock versus Mankind, but it wasn't commonplace, at least at this point in time, and pay-per-view picked it up. TV would try their damnedest to mute it. Saturn yeets Crash right into the swing blade set and breaks a part of it. We have Jeff, the daredevil himself, with an Hurricanrana. Matt brings Crash down. We have a double leg drop. We have Taz with the bin lids, a whisper in the wind, Bob with a 2x4. Oh, Saturn gets this abdominal stretch, bow and arrow lock submission. Not something I would put off in a hardcore match. We have an Emeril Lagasse reference here as a cook, as a chef. I guess you might have been, you would appreciate that one. Bam. And speaking of which, take a blast from your spice weasel. If you get that reference, I love you. Saturn with a brainbuster, a falcon arrow on the chair. Ladder gets involved, and of course it gets a pop. Bob is yeeted into it. Twist of fate, swanton off the ladder. Matt Hardy pins, but Jeff's like, nah, I want this title too. You have to wait a year against Rob Van Dam. Jeff, I'm sorry. Taz mission, and then the Houdini of hardcore just pulls a win out of his ass, retains this title. This is garbage wrestling, but it's fun garbage wrestling. Will, how did you like the hardcore title?
This might be an unpopular opinion, but I watched this match and I was like, one, I love Crash Holly's run with the hardcore title. You get into WrestleMania, the 18 range, 2001, 2002, when they're literally going to backstage vignettes and Crash Holly and them are like running around the arena in the backstage, having like mini hardcore matches throughout the entire pay-per-view. I loved this era of hardcore wrestling. And my unpopular opinion most about this match is watching this made me go, this would get over as fuck in AEW today if they did something like this.
Yes.
Like this style. I'm not talking about a street fight with a bunch of glass and a bunch of unnecessarily like over the top deathmatch spots. But I'm talking like a traditional WWF Attitude Era hardcore match would get over like crazy in AEW. And when we get to the semi-main event, the IC title match, I have a very similar sentiment when we get there. I liked how they paired these off. The ECW guys, the Hardy Boys, and then the Hollies. The pre-show vignettes or the pre-match vignettes where Jeff and Matt are like, yeah, we'll take the ring out, then you and I can do it. Best man wins the title, brother. Like, and then it's Hardcore Holly, and he's talking to Crash, and Crash kind of has the same sentiment. Hardcore Holly just like bitch smacks the shit out of him, and he's like, no, get out of here with that nonsense. Like, he's like, I'm just going to beat the shit out of everybody and take the belt back. Like, that was the whole idea. And they get out there. And that's that whole thing I loved about Crash Holly is he got zero offense, it felt like, in that entire match. He was everybody's whipping post until the last 3 seconds of the match, which were the only three that mattered for him. And you're absolutely right. Him stealing it is the same way you see it later in the Showbiz Pizza Chuck E. Cheese looking place where he's like playing video games and they come running in after him, like Al Snow and the boys and shit. And it's like 24/7 title, but well done. You know, like that's the way I always describe it. This is what the 24/7 division could have been because we had it 20 years ago.
And this was right in the 24/7 rule. We are months away from, well, something rather unfortunate with two stooges that involve an evening gown. And there is only one man I can call on to that. And Ritter, you're up. Oh, boy. That is totally a category. What's not a category is the Coach and Shane, but it might be. Without a beard, Jonathan Coachman looks weird, although I've been watching since 1993. Coach without a beard is still friggin' weird. We have Shane. He's the referee. I'm going to call it right down the middle, and I'm going to call bullshit on that. And what is bullshit is this next match. The Big Show versus Kurt Angle. Show's like, I'm going to have some fun. Go to Hollywood. Do not remind me of Knucklehead Big Show. I watched that movie. It was awful.
Captain Encino.
Yes, he was Captain Encino just previous to this. The powerbomb compliments of Captain Encino. Literally, he did the powerbomb in the build of this match. We have, I want to have some fun. So we get the Big Show Boski. We get Big Show in a kilt. We have the Show Father. And Kurt Angle coming to the ring saying, we have a lot in common, Big Show. Like George Washington, I cannot tell a lie. Like Abe Lincoln, I'm honest to a fault. Marion Barry, my Canadian brain is filled with cobwebs right now, so I'm glad I have someone from the States to help me out with that one. We have Big Show coming out as the Showster. Real American starts playing. Big Show bleached his mustache for this. We have leg drop, real American, Big Show chokeslam, and then we hear his giant entrance theme from Aggression following. Squash Kurt Angle, but I'm okay with this because, you know, Kurt Angle only is Kurt Angle, Mr. Bobblehead here himself. Sky's the limit with him because he's going to become a king soon. But he got crowned in this match. I thought it was dumb. Who the hell is Marion Barry?
I haven't the slightest, bro. When you said you needed somebody from the States, I was like, I have no fucking clue who that is. I'm a bad United Stater. I'm a bad American. But I love Kurt Angle. I don't think there's anything wrong with him eating an L to a comedic Big Show squash match. He didn't at this point in his career. If you watch, and again, you see where it's like Backlash has always been seen as like a, I don't want to say a B-list pay-per-view, but it's not one of the big four. It's not Money in the Bank. You know, it wasn't Hell in a Cell. Like Backlash is always kind of like the redheaded stepchild in a lot of ways in the WWE, WWF pay-per-view cycle. And what I liked about this one specifically was it didn't feel like just the copy and paste from WrestleMania. We had a lot of the lingering stuff happening, but like it still felt like a solid pay-per-view to me. I liked the Big Show comedy shit, the bleached mustache with the hair piece on, so he was bald and just had the long hair and the U. And again, Kurt Angle, 2 years from now, is going to be the biggest star in the company. So him eating an unnecessary L to get a laughing pop from the crowd needed it, because the last back half of this card is nothing but shit kicking. So they needed this like little bit of a lax. So I was here for it.
It was fun. Like I liked the Big Show. I mean, I popped for this at the time. I'm watching this back. I'm like, okay. Maybe it's just my age showing. But my age doesn't show here. Oh, my appreciation for TNA. Oh, and the Dudley Boys. And Test and Albert. So we have Trish here. Trish wants wood. He's playing mind games with Bubba. He is laying provocatively on the table. Get the lemon pledge. And we have tables apparently make Trish horny. Okay. So we have a build-up here where Bubba gets bobble-bombed through a table, like in mid-trance, right before he was going to super-bomb Trish. And then Trish starts to kiss him. Trish says something along the lines of guys explode around her. I mean, I met her and it was amicable, but it was nice. I was wearing a title. She called me champ. Yeah, okay. So they're the Dudley boys here are going to do things the righteous way. They're going to do things the Christian way by violence. As a Christian myself, oh, okay, yep, sure, that might be righteous. Then we see in the crowd Billy Corgan smiling politely, looking to buy a wrestling company. Billy Corgan was doing a, I think he was months away from doing a spell in ECW and having a feud with, of all people, Steve Corino, if I'm not mistaken. Billy Corgan today, NWA still going, apparently. Haven't watched it since Trevor Murdoch won the title, like that big special thing where he won the belt at NWA
73.
90, 73. That's right. Thank you. That's the
I'm
last
a
time I really.
avid, I'm an avid NWA guy. I'm sorry. I still
That's
watch it
okay.
weekly.
It's okay. I'm glad. Like I, there's oversaturation. Like I'll watch Raw, SmackDown, NXT, sometimes Dynamite. Like, yeah, I'm a CM Punk guy, so you know that footage. You know, I'm not getting into that. That was, I thought it was dumb, but man, Billy Corgan here, I thought was a great coup. Bubba Ray calls Trish a bitch. There's one thing that elder relatives have told me is to never say that to a woman's face ever. Avalanche into a big boot test with a doctor bomb test. Okay. This guy grew up less than an hour from where I did. He might have had relatives in my home. He had people who were last named Martin down the street from me. So God knows who, if they were a distant relative or not. I'm not sure. This is one of the most underrated big guys I think that the WWE had ever seen. He was just starting to scratch the surface here. Speaking of underrated big guys, he was tagging with Albert, who would go on to have a killer run in Japan as Giant Bernard. Oh, I just had to get that tangent out. Bubba Ray, he had a hot tag, a Samoan drop. So now we have to acknowledge Bubba Ray. 3D and Test kicks out. I think Albert missed his cue here because the 3D is an established killer move that next to no one kicks out of, like the Hogan. It's much like Papa Shango missing his cue at WrestleMania 8. No one kicks out of the Hogan leg drop. Oh, wait, Sid Justice did. Then we see a bit here where the 3D is teased. Trish is on the apron. Tess gets the big boot. And then afterwards, Trish gets wood, then gets put through a table. And Bubba Ray, somewhere in this match got cut. We see him get that big, they call it the euphoric trance or orgasmic trance, ugh, on his face after he gives women power bombs through tables. This is another slap and meat match, but I enjoy the Dudley boys shtick here. What'd you think of that match, Will? Total car crash.
Oh, 100%, it was a car crash. This was, again, tying back into what I said when we started the match. We talked about Edge and Christian and the Hardy Boys, and now we're getting to the Dudleys here. This was just kind of the catalyst because the Dudleys haven't been in WWE long in 2000, right? When
Almost a
their
year.
day almost, so they're still inside their first year. That's what I thought too. Like that 99 2000 run was when I thought they were coming in. I think that they're still finding their footing. I think you're absolutely right in saying that Test is one of the most underrated big men in history. It was like right when you think he would get red hot, something would happen, or he would get injured, or they would move somebody ahead of him in the pecking order. And it feels like Test was always right there, and then he wasn't. And then he was right there again, and he wasn't. And Albert is still what blows my mind. He's an active producer and trainer and coach in WWE still to this day. So it's kind of cool to see the levels of how the guys are working. Again, you're seeing teases of who and what is going to be the biggest things in wrestling another year from now. You know what I mean? Coming right out of WrestleMania 2000, going into Backlash, looking at what happens at WrestleMania 17. This is the names. So look at it this way. Think of it like the names you see at Backlash are the names that you would expect to be in big places a year from then at WrestleMania. You know what I mean? Like this is where the story started. So then a year away in April, that was where everything finished. And it was kind of cool having a chance to go back and rewatch it and see those connections because all the people and all the pieces from 17 are on this card in various ways. And I was like, that's kind of cool, like thinking about it, like seeing how the puzzle pieces fit together with the planning.
And there is a funny thing. There is a person from this last match and a person in this match for this very same title. Eddie Guerrero, the European champion, defending against Ese Rios, also known as Papi Chulo and Agula. I think one of those gimmicks had a match with, speaking of, Taka Michinoku at WrestleMania 14. So the European title, we have the pairing of Eddie and China. But in this one, Eddie had just gotten his GED. I guess this is like the American equivalent of your high school diploma, if I'm not
Yeah, it's for
mistaken.
like the people, if you dropped out of high school and you chose to go into the workforce instead, you could get your GED in lieu of your high school diploma. It's the equivalent of a high school diploma without finishing your high school curriculum.
Okay, that's fantastic. So Eddie must have been a dropout, and China has been helping him study. They came from the promised, say, coming out in a, was it a 57 Chevy? It was a nice car.
It was a beautiful car.
It was a came out in. Will, do you remember your prom?
I do. My senior year, I wore a red and green plaid tux. Me and my circle of friends took my girlfriend at the time's grandmother's fine china to Taco Bell. And we had Taco Bell in our prom dresses and our prom tuxedos and stuff, when fine china and the really high-end wine glasses with our Baja Blast. It was an absolute shit show on purpose. I was the cool not to be cool kid in high school. So like the intentionally going against the grain, you know, like it's why I wore a fucking plaid tux, man. Like,
That's awesome.
yeah, I was that guy.
I almost didn't go to my, I was class of 03. I almost didn't go. And my one friend was like, wait, Fretz, you're not going? I'm like, well, I couldn't afford it. Like my father at the time was going through some health problems, so he wasn't working. Like, I didn't have a job. And no, I can't. So the next thing I know, I see Yak, Jeremy, if you're hearing this. He wore a giant billboard, "Am I send Fretz to prom?" Teachers contributed to it. I mean, like
That's awesome.
I was very well known. I don't want to say like very popular, but I was well known enough. Small redneck, 800 people, high school. You know, everybody had money by lunchtime, and with a week to spare, I got a suit, a ride, and a date. Although my date was there with her boyfriend, and they had a fight that night. She was hanging out with me the whole time.
That's awesome.
Oh, JR says Eddie or someone here was voted most likely to conceive. I was voted most likely to be in the WWE, and I'm not joking. It's over there in my yearbook. I'm here talking about it, so I'm close. But
Close.
JR says that Eddie has set Hispanic relations back a decade. I put down here China, the original Mammy. Can't resist the Latino heat of Dominic's dad. China tosses Lita into the wolves with a, we got a super bomb spot here. We have Eddie still wrestling in his cummerbund. That might take some talent. High flying Nitro Saturday night action here with these two cruiserweights. The camera misses this flipping arm drag that Ese does. Ese does a, he nopes a plancha a la Samoa Joe. Eddie does Eddie things. Ese with a missile dropkick. Great leapfrog spot. Cat's got my tongue tonight. China with a cheap shot. Eddie with a plancha. Eddie goes for a table powerbomb, but Lita goes to stop them. China yeets Lita, who gets face first on the Spanish announce table. Asai moonsault to the outside, and they both land on the table. And I think Ese kind of overshot that one a little bit. You have an Ese tope to the outside from the corner, which is a great spot. Eddie crotches Ese on the ropes. Essay on the ropes. Eddie gets a super kick. Eddie with a brain buster. We get a jumping arm drag. Moonsault by Essay. Knees. And this really cool spinning cross neck breaker move is what Eddie uses to retain his European title. Essay is a poor spoke as a poor sport. Lita rips the dress off of China. She's down to her bra and panties. And Eddie's like, damn, I ain't mad. I'm going to enjoy the view. How did you like the view of this match? Well,
The ending reminded me that China was underappreciated as to how freaking gorgeous she was. I think that, again, talking about character builds, like China, bona fide star, Eddie Guerrero's getting ready to get bolstered into the main event scene. But S.A. Rios is one of those guys who just kind of disappeared. Like, at first, when they announced it, I was like, S.A. Rios, like, really? Like, then I had to do some digging to really look what he did. Like, he was one of those guys who just kind of was there, solid worker, and then just had a career. You know what I mean? He made it to the show, but he was never the greatest, which is fine. I think Eddie, by this point in his career, was bigger than the European title, and they just weren't ready to pull the trigger in 2000 for it.
not quite yet.
I
This
think they knew
shows.
what they had and they were just waiting for it because his European title, his IC title, his tag title runs, all of them leading to him getting that. And when he won the title at WrestleMania, to me, it's like he was ready now. Looking at what he did in WCW with the US title and then the Cruiserweight title and the TV title, and every time he would win a belt, they would move him up a division and he would get that title and show out with it. I feel like when he got this European title run in 2000, WWE knew what they had and they just stretched it out. And I don't think that's a bad thing that they did it.
Absolutely not. And he left the company for a little while because he got in some trouble around, well, this time next year, actually. He got let go. We have backstage here a few bits. Coach with Stephanie and Triple H, power couple, both wearing gold. Prove why I am that damn good. I am the game, blah, blah, blah. Vince has a surprise for us fans. Austin has transportation problems. Imagine that. Michael Cole, Frosted Tips with Intercontinental Champion Chris Benoit. And he has taken umbrage with being called Mr. Roboto and a robot. And unlike a robot, I have emotions. I have no comment for that very thing. Chris Jericho versus Chris Benoit for the Intercontinental title. And I wrote down here, Canadians, you'll appreciate this. Two Canucks fighting over the last timbit. If you get it, you get it. We have Mr. Roboto, DC is Jericho, JR comparing Vince McMahon to Tony Soprano. No comment. Chris Jericho, hey, Benoit is a deprogrammed drone, just like politicians. I repeat, no comment. We have classic techers in this match. And to quote you, this is kind of a, unless I'm miscontextualizing this, this is like a pissed off for greatness situations, I think, here, because this match is amazing. You get two of the best workers of all time. Yeah, we know what Buddy did at the end of his life and his career. This is just some phenomenal work by him. He's taking Jericho to Suplex City. We got a Benoit suplex to the outside. Y2J plancha is noped. Benoit with the abdominal stretch. And we see, I was watching this movie and I'm like, Chris Jericho do the Judas effect in 2000? It sure looked like the Judas effect in
That
2000.
swinging back elbow was real close to a Judas effect.
Very much. We have, he's always had that one in his arsenal. If only he pulled off the stroke or the breakdown or the one of the 1004 holds. Lion Salt, Benoit with the knees up, Jericho with the face crusher. Triangle dropkick that Benoit swats away while he's standing on the apron. Jericho with a back superplex that very, very closely in midair had a reversal by Benoit. A double powerbomb by Jericho. Crossface, they reach the ropes. Walls reach the ropes. Tito Santana forearm hits Tim White. So we're going to have some non-referee shenanigans here because Benoit is going to get the belt shot for a two count. Snap suplex on the belt, kind of without the referee's peripheral vision. And then we get the flying headbutt by Chris Benoit. The belt is right by Chris Jericho's side. He manages to get the belt up. Benoit headbutts the title. And that's where Tim White calls for the disqualification. Still your Intercontinental Champion, Chris Benoit. And then for good measure, Tim White eats a Walls of Jericho by Chris Jericho after this match. This was two of the dungeon's best. And they're putting that this is the beginning of their rivalry. They have another match at Judgment Day. They have another match at SummerSlam, Rumble. Then they tag. Man, speaking of people they're going to take off, what did you think here, dude?
Jericho at this point is one of the biggest stars on the world. He wins the undisputed title at Vengeance in 01, right? Is that it? So it's just a little bit over a year away from when he does that. So again, and that I seem to be ringing this into fruition. It's really just a broken record at this point, and I apologize for it. But like, you see Chris Jericho and you see Benoit here, and then you think about a year from now when Jericho's becoming, he beats Stone Cold and The Rock both in one night, you know, and then you think about Benoit himself gets on a trajectory and goes and does what he does. Unfortunately, I say I'm the king of separating the art and the person. So before I say my next thing, like, it's unfortunate what happened. There's no need to talk about what specifically happened, but his run from 2000 through the Rumble to winning the belt and his match at that 03 Rumble with Kurt Angle, like, so many just workshops on just banger matches. And this was another one. This was, you said it, two guys that went out there. They said, look, you get 20 minutes with your entrances. They went out there and just beat the shit out of each other, called a match that was gorgeous from beginning to end. And the finish protected both guys. You know, Jericho didn't have to take the L, and Chris Benoit didn't have to, you know, lose his belt. It was a good way to protect both men. And I thought this was a great match. And I like seeing the IC title defended on pay-per-views in the semi-main event. I miss that.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been getting main events on TV lately, like with like Gunther and his 160-day run. That's a rib. That's straight up devilish, man. That's phenomenal. Backstage, another great promo with Frosted Tips Michael Cole. He guarantees to the people that he's walking out as the champion. They're talking about Stone Cold, and he's like, hey, Stone Cold, whatever happens, happens. We have The Rock versus Triple H for the WWF title. And this is just a Cody Rhodes match. You're stacking all the odds against The Rock here. We have Shane as the referee. We have Vince accompanying Triple H. We have the Stooges getting involved in this match. We have boo, asshole, slut. So the crowd is giving their search history out here. Incognito mode, guys. Come on. And then Vince McMahon's like, hey, card subject to change. Austin's not going to be here. And this match here, this is what I call, because I watched this episode of The Simpsons recently, the fireworks factory match. It's like, where's Stone Cold? Where's the anticipation for the glass to shatter? Because, you know, these two are going to put on a good match in like a flick of a wrist. They can put on a good match against each other. The Rock and Triple H, classic rivalry. Had Triple H not had his, you know, ticker tinkered with, who knows what we would have seen at WrestleMania with the Avengers Endgame booking of the last 10 minutes of Cody and Roman. We are building anticipation to the glass shatter. And then finally, glass shatters, and the pop that Austin gets here. He is November, 5 months off of getting his neck surgery. Someone's at, never mind. Mm-hmm. Someone was at the door here. They're talking to my mother. But yes, he is 5 months off of neck surgery. And at this point in time, I was recovering from spinal surgery. I had scoliosis. I have metal fused back here. So it was kind of a neat moment here. I had it in June 99, right before the King of the Ring. I begged my nurse to watch that on pay-per-view from my hospital bed. Glad I did not, because Billy Gunn, no. And because Austin is off of that operation, he couldn't get very physical. So you see him hitting some very huge unprotected chair shots right to everyone's face. Linda McMahon comes out with recently fired referee Earl Hebner to make the count as The Rock hits the People's Elbow, Spinebuster, and wins the WWE title. This is kind of a make bad for Mania 15, which was a questionable WrestleMania 2000, God, which was questionable at best for some people. This made up for it. This was another car crash, attitude era, overbooking bit. And we saw the return of Austin. Will, what do you think?
This was one of the few copy and paste, though, from WrestleMania 2000 for me, because we had a McMahon in every corner for that match. And we had just been through the buildup at Rumble in 2000. So it was earlier this year in January, we had Cactus Jack and Triple H. And then we saw the build through with the Hell in a Cell match and everything that came out of it. And I feel like after the just the absolute run that Triple H has had as champion, this Rock match, although I think Rock could have won it at WrestleMania 2000 and it would have been fine, I felt like this was taking the Rock's moment in a lot of ways, because it wasn't WrestleMania and it wasn't Backlash, and everything that he had done up until this point was like, so Cactus Jack couldn't do it. You know, like in the Hell in a Cell, and Cactus Jack couldn't do it in the street fight and all of this and the promos with Mick Foley and everything. And Triple H looked damn unbeatable. But Rock and Austin could do it. Like, it seemed weird to me. Like, it seemed, looking back at the story, Triple H was built to be this larger than life champion. And then he just got whoop-de-dooed by little shenanigans between Rock and Austin. You know, like, it was all theatrics with a lot of overbooking, but it made Triple H look unnecessarily weak, you know, because they had built him to be so strong. And then for him to drop the title like this, and granted, Austin did come back and he was involved, but it wasn't like they stacked the ring on top of the man to keep him from kicking out. And at this point, that's how I felt Triple H had been built. So this was one of my few, like, Rock and Triple H don't have bad matches. I'm not saying it was a bad match. I don't like the fact that Rock had to wait from WrestleMania 2000, because you go back to January before that when, you know, Mick Foley had just won his first world title and the Rock had to win it back, and then the empty arena match and everything that was going on, and then Triple H. Like, it was so weird with all of that. You know what I mean? And then for it just to be this match at Backlash, it made the last 4 months, 5 months of storylines just kind of feel like, eh. It was just, there was a lot going on. And for it just to finish with a Rock Austin finish and cheers in the Winged Eagle, like, I remember thinking back in the day, this was awesome. And now I look back on it and I'm like, this didn't age well. Like, this is one of those attitude moments to me. I'm just like, this didn't make any sense. Like, for it to have gone down this way with everything that else has happened throughout the last 5 months to open 2000. You know what I mean? Red hot way to open it. And then, that's just how I felt. It just kind of,
I was a Triple H hater back in the day, so I loved this. I thought this is overall, we're gonna wrap things up, Will. This was a very good pay-per-view. A lot of people, myself included, think this could be one of the best pay-per-views out of the entire Attitude Era, top to bottom. I thought it was stacked. I do kind of see your point about how Triple H was just built, and then he'll get a short run with the belt next month and then go on back and forth runs throughout the rest of 2000 and 2001. But I'm going to give you a chance here just to plug your stuff. Where can people find you, listen to you, watch your stuff, see your lovely bearded face, etc.?
Well, first and foremost, I want to say thanks. I always, like I said, I love having a chance to go back and rewatch this stuff and kind of talk about it with 2024 eyes, because I don't think about wrestling the same way I did when I was 15 years old. You know what I mean? And sometimes these are first watches from when I was a kid. So I'm grateful for it. Thank you. If you enjoyed what I had to say and you're interested in my shenanigans elsewhere, if you look anywhere you do anything on the internet for The Will Gray, you'll find me. Check the link tree in my bio. It'll have everything I do for BotchBots and Chair Shots, Off the Top Media, Rivet City Radio, my writing profile for Last Word on Sports. It's all there. One nice, neat little link tree at The Will Gray.
Phenomenal. And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram. Sometimes I'm on Blue Sky. I deleted Threads. Fretzelmania, FRETZLE. This podcast is, of course, on Wrestle Addict Radio, the cure for the common wrestling podcast, home of the Young Lions Perspective, the Kings of the Rings podcast, and Nate the Effing Great's Brace for Impact. Until next time, folks, thank you very much for coming on, Will. I appreciate you. I'm going to have you on again in the future. Love to talk some or attitude era goodness with you. Till next time, folks, TTFN, ta-ta for now. Keep your stick on the ice and go Leafs go.
This has been a Wrestle Attic Radio branded podcast.